If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks for having me, Ben. You have me on the show a lot.
You're one of my favorite guests.
Yeah.
You're like the Steve Martin of being a guest on The Greatest Generation.
Thanks.
Well, I was going to suggest we open some cards, and I think we should do that. But before we do that...
That old bit that everyone loves, beloved card opening bit.
But before we do that, I just wanted to talk to you about a thing that showed up on my doorstep a couple days ago. It was from Jesse Thorne at Maximum Fun HQ, and it just had it had The Greatest Generation care of Ben Harrison on the address.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this is going to be like a turd, or like Jesse is going to, is.
Oh, why would he do that?
No, I don't know. Here's the thing. I pinch myself constantly that people like this show and that we are on a important podcast network and a lot of things. And like in the absence of somebody physically in my presence affirming that it deserves the success it has had.
You do need constant affirmation. I have noticed that.
I do. I really do.
And you're doing a great job, Ben.
Like I expect every meeting to start with, so we're cutting your show, you know? So I was like, what nightmare is this going to be? And I open it up, and inside is a smaller box that is addressed to The Greatest Generation care of Maximum Fun and was sent to their Los Angeles office.
Oh, no.
Inside this box is I think this person's name is Nicholas. I'll withhold the last name to protect the innocent. But Nicholas, I believe, sent his childhood collection of Star Trek cards to us.
Why would he do that?
I don't know. There are so many cards here. There are like probably more than 500 cards.
Is there a note or a card or anything?
There's no note. I've only pulled a few cards out, but my favorite one so far is from original series Star Trek, and it's literally a photograph of the corridor on the ship, and it just says corridor.
Oh, my God. Boy, why would anyone want to get rid of these cards? They sound fantastic.
Yeah. Like the first handful, there's one that's like the taxonomy of next generation shuttlecraft from all the way from flat pack bunk bed to Toyota Previa. There's one of a hypo spray. There's one of Kalar, Worf's girlfriend.
So you get cards of characters, but you also get cards of objects?
Yeah, there's one of the ship's computer core, which is just, it's like a really low-rent 3D rendering of some like cylindrical objects.
Is there a Dustbuster card?
I don't know. I haven't found one yet. I've kind of just randomly pulled these out. But
Ben, without a note, I find that box and the idea that someone would send it vaguely threatening. Am I alone in that?
No, there's definitely an implied threat.
What does it mean? Like, would this person prefer that we opened those cards instead of the cards we're opening?
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing, Adam. I totally get what you're saying about it being an implied threat. I kind of agree. But at the same time...
Especially when they send it to Max Fun. Like, yeah.
But at the same time, Adam, you are the only other person that has ever done this to me, is send me a box of Star Trek cards. So...
Oh, yeah. And when I did it, it was most definitely a threat.
Well, should we open some?
I guess.
The game is 5 card stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Or this is just the card there.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
Alrighty. I have a pack ready to go here. Ooh, that one came open real easy.
Once again, these are portfolio prints trading cards. Totally different from the garbage cards that were sent to you. that were so bad that its owner did not want them anymore.
I don't think that the portfolio prints were available at that time. All right, I've got one for an episode called The Devil's Due. Do you remember that one?
D-U-E or D?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't. I don't remember that one.
There's like a kind of a hot lady that's convinced this planet that she is their Satan and that, like, they owe her the planet.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah.
She was sort of a foxy devil.
A witchy woman, if you will.
Sure, yeah.
I've got Time's Arrow Part 2, which is a pretty nice-looking rendering of Guinan. Always fun to see Guinan. Got The Last Outpost. We saw that one, right? That's the one with, like, They Call Me Tim and the Ferengi.
Yeah.
There's one of Wesley Crusher looking like he's got some real heavy-duty eyeliner called When the Bow Breaks. Oh, yeah, this is the Aldeans episode where they, like, steal all the children.
Oh, yeah.
And the boy organizes
The boy polishes his dolphin.
Yeah. And finally, Yesterday's Enterprise with a picture of Tasha Yar on an easel underneath a kind of old-school-looking NCC-1701C.
That episode's coming up. People are emailing us to tell us how excited they are about that.
I'm amped as fuck for that episode.
Yeah, I think we're really going to do great things with it. That episode's going to be super fun, a little unlike the episode we're doing today, which is a real let's-make-fun-of-terrorism episode, isn't it, Ben?
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
This is episode 12 of season 3, The High Ground. And it starts with the Enterprise in orbit of Rudia 4, a planet that we have never been to before, but for some reason...
This is our most canonical Cosby-named planet yet, until we talk to the Theosians.
Yeah, well, the Rudians and the Theosians are... they're in neighboring star systems, right?
They are, yeah.
Right down the hall from each other?
Yeah.
it is Rudia 4, but it also is also Planet Shopping Mall, because every time we see, like, what the surface of this planet looks like, it's just...
It's the San Diego Outdoor Shopping Mall.
Totally.
Set, for sure.
And I think it's Worf, Data, and the Doctor are...
They're enjoying a beverage in an outdoor patio. They're like, they found a cheesecake factory, and they're enjoying a little dining al fresco.
Yeah, it's nice until a storefront gets explodified, and they're pretty sure that it is terrorists from jump, like. They know that the planet has a bit of a terrorism problem, and everybody's strapped. You know, it's not like Shore Leave City here where everybody gets to go down and have a fun hang. And so, you know, being good Starfleet officers, they rush into the fray, and the Doctor is treating injured civilians right off the bat, and Worf is trying to convince her to hit the bricks and beam back up to the ship. And Data sort of gets in on the trying to persuade her, but she won't be persuaded. She, like, really insists that until the medics arrive, like, she needs to focus on helping these people not die.
It's an interesting role reversal between Beverly and Data, because usually it's Data with the death wish.
Yeah. And Data's, like, standing there trying to keep an eye on things. He's not going over and laying his hand down on some still burning rubble or trying to see if there's any unexploded parts of the bomb that he could
that he could play with. Yeah.
Yeah. they radio up to the bridge and tell Picard what's going on, and Picard is now trying to convince Crusher. And it's like one of those things where Data is not even done explaining that there's been a terrorist attack. Then Picard is like,
"Transporter room 3, lock onto the away team, prepare to beam them back."
"Yes, Captain."
Picard's like, "Beverly, we got to get you out of there. Things are smoking, we're hearing. So time to go." And Bev is like, "No, actually, I'm going to stay down here and fix some people." And basically disobeys a direct order. Picard is like, "I'm beaming you up." Beverly is like, "No." Picard looks at Riker like, "Oh, no, she didn't." And Riker is basically like,
"I don't want to be in the transporter room to greet her."
They both agree that they don't want to piss her off by beaming her up against her will, so they leave her there. And that was ridiculous to me.
Yeah, if there's a chain of command, like, you got to follow it.
Evidently not in this case, because everyone's afraid of Beverly for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Hot-headed Beverly.
Hothead Bev.
Don't want to meet Beverly in the transporter room, that's for sure. She might use the thicker gauge hypodermic needle.
Or the thicker gauge wig, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, so they leave her down there.
They leave her down there, and everybody's worst predictions come true immediately, because sort of out of nowhere, this guy, like, sort of materializes, runs through a hole in space.
Yeah. And it's a little bit Q-flashy, just a little bit.
Yeah. Gats, one of the security people that have shown up, and grabs Dr. Crusher and re-disappears from whence he came.
"You don't understand, I've..."
And that's our dun-dun-dun moment. That's our inciting incident.
We should mention that these Ansada terrorists shoot laser guns that just spark the hell out of people when they're hit.
Yeah.
Looks amazing. Some good practicals.
Yeah. The models of the guns themselves and the, you know, the beams are all, it's all really cool. It's, like, pretty different from what we've seen so far, I think.
Yeah.
Like, as cheap as the set of the shopping mall looks, this is, like, a pretty fully realized society that the Enterprise is visiting.
Yeah.
It's not always the case.
No.
So Wesley's back.
Wesley, the boy.
The boy. Young Wesley Crusher.
My son.
Have you noticed that we haven't had many Wesley episodes in the last, I don't know, in the last six, maybe he's been in, like, two or something like that?
Yeah.
I wonder what's going on. Maybe he's got his college applications to fill out or something.
I don't know. Maybe he's serving some chocolate to the ladies.
Ooh. Or maybe his relationship with Picard has gotten to a point where Picard is keeping him in, like, a gimp box, and he only gets let out at certain times.
Yeah. They seem to have done a little bit of a tweak to his hair, too. It is not super bouffanty, but it's still, like, an entire bottle of Suave spray hairspray.
Yeah.
It's still pretty great. It's really hard to fit a vinyl zipper mask over that haircut, I bet.
Oh, yeah, and they probably had to, like, make sure that the product in his hair wasn't corrosive to the rubber that they used on the mask.
Yeah.
Kind of does explain why he has so many pimples, though, because, you know, that's going to keep a lot of...
Because vinyl doesn't breathe well.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to get so much hate mail. So we meet Alexina Devos, who's the lovely chief of security for the Rutians. And she and Riker are going to kind of tag team this terrorism issue.
We get the idea right away that there is absolutely no sexual tension between her and Riker. I don't know how they do it. I think this might be the first time in the series that Riker works closely with a female from another planet, and there's just nothing there.
Yeah, it's like there's zero implied sex, there's zero implied interest. It's like it's a totally professional relationship. And
I love how our show has become the Mr. Skin of implied sexual references.
Yeah, how many eggplant emojis would you give this episode? This is a one eggplant emoji episode.
Yeah.
We should start working that into the episode titles.
Oh, just, man. Like,
you can use emojis on podcast titles, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I'm willing to try that.
You know, the ship's been there for a while when the episode starts, so maybe they already had their fling.
Yeah, well,
maybe they got it out of their system.
While Beverly and Data are eating at P.F. Chang's, Riker's off banging away in some condo just outside the mall.
Yeah, possible.
She's kind of rocking the breadbox cover uniform.
Yeah, she's got like half a breadbox.
Is that the rating system for how boxy the uniforms are? Yeah, she's definitely rocking half box.
So they're working on this.
This is sort of a Wesley-centric ep, because as soon as his mom gets kidnapped, Wes is like, all right, I got to be involved. I want to be a part of the team that goes down to rescue her.
Right.
And Picard is like,
shut up, Wesley.
No, like, that would be idiotic. I'm not going to do that.
You are not a commando. You are barely an ensign.
If you can't fight me off, what makes you think that you're going to be able to take on an entire terrorist group? Forget it. Get back in the box, Wes.
Yeah.
So he gets assigned to data mining a little bit with Data.
Yeah, he Data and Geordi are going to work on this transporter technology, because it's a real head scratcher. Like, they don't understand how it works, because it doesn't work the way their transporter works, and they don't see they can trace a transporter beam, they can find transporter residuals and all that, but they can't do that with this because it's something different. So they don't know what to do there, and the tech team is going to work on that. Meanwhile, Riker and the security lady are like having a conversation about the nature of living in a society that's at war with terrorists, and also occasionally doing some actual work to try and find Dr. Crusher. And we go to the cave where Dr. Crusher is being kept, and we meet
Kirill Finn.
He looks a lot like he's got Michael Landon Highway to Heaven hair.
Yeah, I was trying to put my finger on what this guy's look was, and I think you nailed it.
He's really Landoning, isn't he?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, early Seinfeld hair, but
yeah.
I think you're closer to the mark. Everybody on this planet has a stripe in their hair also.
Yeah.
All the women have, like, kind of auburn to red hair with a black stripe, and the dudes all have, like, dark hair with a white stripe.
Yeah, and so this Finn guy brings down, it looks like some wet jerky. He's getting down on this jerky in front of Beverly, and he's like, oh, you must be hungry. You should have some of this. And Beverly's doing that thing that hostages typically do where they don't talk. They just stare. Yeah. They stare down their captors. She's not wanting to play games. She doesn't want any of this weird jerky.
Yeah, this is the higher ground of the episode title. Eventually, like, she breaks because he shows her the sick people that he's brought her there to treat. And we should say that, like, this terrorist group, unlike all other terrorist groups in history, doesn't do a lot of kidnapping. Which I think, like, could be, like, one of the definitional distinctions between freedom fighters and terrorists, maybe. Is that, like, I don't know that the revolutionaries in the George Washington era were doing a lot of, like, kidnapping for ransom. But maybe I'm wrong about that. Who knows?
It would really change my opinion of him
Yeah,
if that were the case.
That would be some weak shit.
Can we ever really know, though?
impossible to say. But yeah, so like they've been wondering why she's kidnapped, and like part of the speculation is that they're trying to bring the Federation into this dispute. And the other side of it, though, turns out that the Ansada separatists are all suffering from a mysterious illness, some worse than others. And there's like a section of their caves where just a bunch of people are on bed rest. And Dr. Crusher is like, well, oh shit, like I'm going to doctor them. Like I like her instincts to doctor things are
annoying,
are on full display in this episode. Like
she's suddenly really ready to eat the jerky and fix some people once she sees all these writhing people on cots.
Yeah. It's like, he's like still sort of explaining himself and she's like, shut up, I'm doctoring right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the scene is we get some writhers on cots, and Beverly's like, look, I could really fix these people up if we get some gear from the Enterprise. And Finn's like, fuck that. Like, I'm not going to let you talk to your ship. And from around a corner comes a little boy with some slick back hair, which is how you know he's lost a parent or two. Yeah. And he's got Enterprise gear. He's got Federation medical supplies.
Yeah.
And he gives them to her to get to work.
And these are the medical supplies that the Enterprise was here to deliver.
Right.
So that's the other side of it, is that Finn feels like the Federation has taken a side in this conflict by providing anything to his enemies.
Yeah, Finn's like, why don't you give anything to us? If you're giving stuff to them, then you must be on their side.
And she's like, well, you didn't even ask. And he's like, well, you should at least let them break it in half and let us pick which part we get.
Right.
It is a guiding principle on which Darth Vader's based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
That is about as preachy as the moralizing gets throughout the episode.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's like Alexa DeVos going, the Ansada are killers, they're rapists, and some of them are nice people, I'm sure. And then, I don't know, you might be wrong about this, because there's also like a Mao quote later on where Picard is like talking about how he doesn't believe that political power grows from the barrel of a gun, which I thought was surprising, like that he kind of quotes that, you know, without citation of any kind. He's like, oh, you real read up on Mao, are you, Captain Picard, member of quasi-socialist utopia society? So the Ansada decide to mount an attack on the Enterprise itself, which takes the form of several of them flashing onto the ship. And down in engineering, like, Geordi kind of crushes this encounter where, you know, he's not armed or ready for this, but these guys beam on, and he takes a pretty impressive dive into the Shimoda corner to avoid getting gatted. And
as if he just keeps a mattress back there.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe he does.
Yeah.
Maybe his real doll kicked him out of the apartment.
Geordi, I hope you appreciate the real doll that I've made you as a parting gift for your crew. Please enjoy it with my compliments.
I can see that you could never know true love, so this is the next best thing, trust me.
I suggest you keep it away from your work environment.
Don't let your captain know that you have it. He'll try and take it away from you. He has no law to fit my crime.
I promise you it's very durable. I've been fucking my real doll for thousands of years. It should outlast you.
The warranty is good as the paper is printed on.
God, this is another enemy for which Kevin Uxbridge would be a great ally.
He would be fun to have. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Ansada also show up on the bridge, and Worf basically gets caught with his pants down here. Like, they beam on, and like Picard has to cold cock one of them.
Well, everyone gets caught with their pants down, right? Because like they know at this point that these people can travel in the blink of an eye; they can appear anywhere. Your shields are useless. they go down to the planet packing dustbusters, but no one on the ship packs dustbusters.
Right.
As soon as they're aware of this threat. I thought that was a real...
Yeah, they should have passed them out.
That's poor form. Yeah.
Yeah.
You break the glass on every corridor, and you take out those dustbusters.
Maybe they don't know what the range of this thing is. But anyways, this results in Picard being captured, and that is a big problem because...
Picard really decks that guy.
Yeah, he got... That guy is going to have some jaw pain for... at least a few weeks.
People are panicking. Like people are flashing in all over the ship. Wesley and Data are like, we don't know where they're coming from. We don't know where they're going. Like, we're getting reports of people getting killed and injured. It's sort of a panic scene.
Yeah, this terrorism is super effective. And there's a lot of conversation about the fact that terrorism has been effective in political conflicts of the past. And...
Data, these are questions that mankind has been struggling with throughout history. Your confusion is only human.
Fortunately, the nerd crew is able to figure out what this thing is. And what it is like a technology that was explored in the Federation a long time ago as a possible transporter thing, but abandoned because it was determined to be incredibly dangerous to human flesh. And that happens to be what the Ansada separatists are suffering from. Like, it's just shredding their DNA every time they jump.
And you see this when they jump on board the Enterprise, because every time someone flashes on, they appear to achieve orgasm.
Yeah, I'm just in time for the Jonathan Demme Film Festival.
So the pain must be incredibly pleasurable.
Mm-hmm. Pain don't hurt.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that which longer nurse than the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
Once they figured this out, they realized that, like, the next time they are scanning when somebody uses it, they're going to be able to pinpoint the base. And Finn takes a trip up to the Enterprise to tell Troy that...
I am not here to hurt you.
He's got Picard and, like, you know, he wants...
an embargo and trade sanctions levied against Rutia.
And Riker's like, fine, we're going to fucking negotiate with you terrorists. And
yeah, the game changes when Picard's down there.
Yeah, and Devos is like, maybe she, like, detected this willingness in Riker, and that's why she doesn't sweat him. Because she's like, no, you're not supposed to negotiate with terrorists. And he's like, we got to negotiate. Like... like, what choice do we have? So they realize, like, once Finn does this, they realize where the Ansada's base is. Like, he sort of ironically exposes his base by beaming aboard to talk to Troy.
It kind of looks like Planet NWO from a couple episodes ago, right?
Yeah, I guess it does, yeah. Probably used a lot of the same truss work.
Yeah. A lot of the turnbuckles are still up.
Mm-hmm. It's only a matter of time before we find out whether Riker or Devos gets the strap.
Riker's finishing move is pulling the snake from his bag.
they're gonna mount a covert operation to rescue Crusher and Picard, and Worf is super thirsty because he got his pants pulled down so bad, and they're like, getting ready to beam down. We cut down to the surface, and Beverly and Picard are having a conversation, and she's like, oh man, like, this is so fucked. Like, we're definitely gonna die, and, like, if we don't get out of this, there's some really important shit I need to tell you. And then the lights cut, and it's like a cool, like, clandestine raid where, you know, Worf and Riker and Dustbuster Boys are running around the place, like, knocking people out, shooting people, and it all comes to a head in the cell where Crusher and Picard are being held, and Finn runs back there to, like, kill them, so that even if the raid is successful, it'll be sort of a Pyrrhic victory. And and he, like, raises his gun, and then Devos shoots him in the back, and she had her gun set to kill
And Riker's like, what the hell did you do that for?
Enterprise Crew's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
That really escalated quickly.
Yeah. I think her explanation is essentially like, if we had imprisoned him, it would have been like a focus for more violence. And they're like, yeah, but you sort of made a martyr out of him. And so they have some real mixed feelings about these people after this.
Finn gets gadded. Devos explains herself. And then Slickback Boy holds a gun up to her.
Oh, yeah.
Slickback's like, I've been a killer since I was little. Like, this is what I need to do. I've watched so many of my adult friends do it. Maybe it's my turn. And Beverly sort of mothers him into putting his gun down.
Yeah, and she's had a little relationship with this kid. You know, she's been, you know, very warm to him in her way.
She sees a little bit of Wes in him.
Yeah. She likes the cut of his jib. And she talks him out of doing something that he would have regretted the rest of his life.
Yeah, and so at that point, it's handshakes and high fives. The Enterprise crew beams back up. And Beverly and Wes are reunited on the bridge. And a warm embrace.
Yeah, it's like one of those really like slow motion scenes where he's running toward her and she's running toward him. They fall into each other's arms. And then he turns to Picard and he's like, hey, good to see you too, buddy. Gives him a little wink.
Yeah. A family reunited.
Yeah.
Picard's like, all right, get the fuck out of here. Yep. As soon as your hug's over.
Let's hit the bricks.
We got some more exploring to do. And then that's episode end.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com. They get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use. The products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of TripleClick.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
So I guess we don't have a resolution to the dispute, the A story dispute.
Yeah.
The war continues, right? But there's a little bit of hope because Riker's like, you know, sometimes these fights end with a boy putting down his gun. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's all it takes.
Wesley's like, boys can put their guns down.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did like this episode. I think that there's some cheese to it. There's more cheese on it than I typically like in an episode.
Yeah.
But I thought it was more thoughtful of a thing about terrorism than I would have imagined to exist in the year 1990. Like, there's smarter shit said about terrorism in this episode from 26 years ago than is often said in, like, contemporary media about terrorism.
I agree. I was often surprised at how they were able to articulate the problem in such a way that you just don't hear anymore on a 24-hour news cycle, even. Like,
yeah, or even just in, like, 24, you know? Like, in a show that's, like, kind of about terrorism. They never actually, like, explore the issue. And they don't have, like, a ton of time devoted to it in this, but I felt like it was pretty insightful, and, like, and I appreciated it.
I suppose it's expecting too much to think that the show could solve terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
But I came away a little disappointed that they couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, the war goes on. They just decide to leave. They don't fix their technology.
Definitely.
I mean, I imagine they're going to use the orgasm transporter.
Oh!
To conduct their raids.
At least the Unsatans know what the risk is.
Yeah, maybe that the slickback boy affected some change. Who knows? Maybe he will be their new ruler. Fit him for a breadbox uniform.
Yeah. See if they got a breadbox in size small.
Yeah, I think I liked it too. Good ep.
Good ep.
Ben, as you were watching this episode, forensically even, studying its every detail, did you find a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I gotta throw my Shimoda award to Worf in this episode. I just thought it was so ridiculous that he wasn't ready with a phaser when those guys beamed onto the bridge. I mean, not the first time that hostile aliens have beamed onto the bridge. And in the past, you know, like when the Borg did it, he totally shot one. And this time he is like, if you watch the master shot of this scene, Worf is frozen doing nothing for most of it. He's like, he's totally baffled by the fact that they have beamed on. It's like, dude, get with the program. This is what we are dealing with today.
I don't understand how the most important room in the entire ship doesn't have a phaser on it that's just at arm's reach.
Yeah.
I bet Worf doesn't make that mistake again. He's keystring a key fob phaser from now on.
How about you? Do you have a drunk Shimoda?
To me, the Shimoda was Finn, who chooses a weird time to sort of show his art to people. Like, he one of his character development traits is sort of portraying him as a sensitive artist type.
Yeah.
So he's down there plotting his terror schemes. And at the same time, sort of drawing Take On Me pictures of Beverly.
Yeah. They're weird ones, though, too, because, like, it kind of looks
like... They're body parts.
Yeah. It kind of looks like they took some photos and, like, put them into Photoshop and put the, like, draw effect on them.
Yeah.
It's not, like... It doesn't really look like a real artist made those.
And I guess I don't know what that's supposed to do for his character development. Like, are we supposed to feel sympathy for him because he may be sensitive and artistic? It seems to work on Beverly for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, she softens a little bit at the idea that she's been drawn.
Yeah. And Picard is definitely excited about the idea that this guy clearly sweats her. You know, he's like, okay, like...
Yeah, it can be exploited.
Finally, there's
Picard.
Some leverage available in this situation.
Yeah, he's really stoked about that. he can leverage this to his favor. Because at this point, they're pretty fucked. Like, wrist and leg shackles in a cave, no way out. I mean, they're looking at least Picard's looking at it pretty realistically. He thinks they're going to die.
Yeah.
But he doesn't fall to pieces the way Geordi does on that storm planet.
Right.
Like, he's a pretty cool customer.
Yeah, get the sense that he knows from captivity.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode, unfortunately, is season 3, episode 13, Deja Q. The crew is surprised by the appearance of their mischievous nemesis, Q.
Ben, I was so excited for this episode that I accidentally watched this one before the episode we just reviewed.
Well, that wasn't a mistake because we don't have any vetoes for me to prevent us from having to watch this stupid episode. So.
Yeah. I'm pretty pumped about it. You would have vetoed this?
Probably. It's a Q episode, is it not?
I am aware of his presence based on the reading of its summary. So,
yeah. It's incredibly non-descriptive summary.
And also the title.
Yeah. The summary on this is maybe the worst of the long list of terrible descriptions that we have read of upcoming episodes.
Mm. Yeah. I'm pumped. I love Q episodes. It's basically the greatest conflict that you and I have over this show. Our positions are intractable.
Yeah. We're going to have to agree to disagree.
We're like two opposite factions.
Mm-hmm.
Me being the terrorist faction, clearly,
sure.
who seeks to destroy our show through weird uses of vetoes.
Yeah, I'm just trying to hold this ship together.
Yeah.
Bare hands.
Really white-knuckling it. Well, good luck with that.
If you'd like to discuss our show on Twitter, use the hashtag GreatestGen. We'll definitely find it. You can also tweet at Adam at CutForTime or me at Benjamin R, A-H-R.
Be among one of Ben's 3,500 Twitter followers and one of my mere 1,000 Twitter followers.
Oh, come on. You have more than 1,000.
It's actually been rocketing up quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
That's the viewers of The Greatest Generation.
Yeah.
They love you. They know that following you on Twitter is going to put lots of extra jokes into their day, and that is delightful.
It's what I do.
You should also join the Facebook group and the Reddit. There's a Maximum Fun Reddit and a Greatest Gen Reddit. Both of them have the episode posted in them every time a new one comes out. So thanks to the folks who do that. And
couple ways that you can support the show, Ben. I'm not sure if you know about these ways. One of which is you can rate the show on iTunes or whatever podcast purveyor of choice that you use.
Give
us a 5-star review. It's one of the great ways that people find out about our show and may indicate our relative quality to other shows.
Right.
And you can also contribute to the show's production by going to MaximumFun.org/donate and making the show something you contribute to.
Yes.
And that really helps.
It very much helps, especially when we're using up valuable time on the weekends that our wives would like to be spending with us doing our Dorkazord Star Trek podcast instead.
The Adam and Ben Divorce Court Legal Fund is is waiting for your contributions. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a very Q-y episode of The Greatest Generation.
Out of time. Bye-bye. Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.